how did you first hear about Intermedia?
Well, actually, I came to Vancouver with my then wife, who had been offered a job at Simon Fraser University. And so I just came along for, I guess it was a Christmas holiday. And while I was here, I got a phone call from Joe Kyle, who got a hold of me through Dave Orcutt. And Joe Kyle showed me what they were doing at Beattie Street. I was fascinated with it. And he said, would you like to come and work with us? We need somebody to front the show, the organization, because Canada Council wants to finance it and wants to have somebody that they can rely on, that the money wouldn't be squandered. And I said, well, sure, it interests me, but it depends on whether my wife gets the job at Simon Fraser. Well, eventually she did, and eventually I said, yeah, I'd love to come. And then in September, I guess, October of 68, I came from Montreal, from the film board, right? And took over as executive producer. And so, there we are, that's it.
So what were you doing in Montreal at the time?
Well, I was a producer at the film board, doing documentary films, but also doing experiments with the first video, portable video, which were called Panasonic Portapacks. And they were terrible machines when you think of it, because you couldn't edit the stuff. It would break up. It was half-inch analog. Kind of technology, and but we had fun with it, and we experimented with it at the board. And I guess because I was always interested in experimentation, that sort of appealed to Joe Kyle, and I can't remember who else. I think I met Bud Dory there too, and. And of course, Orcutt I knew from before.
Oh, you did? Where you met Orcutt?
Oh, at UBC. We actually did the 25th anniversary show of the Extension Department of UBC. And we blew everybody's mind with a visual presentation that was just absolutely marvelous. Crazy, and you know, using various oils and water and colors projected onto a screen, and with poetry being read and so on, and you know, everybody was a little bit startled by this. So that was it.
So what was your first impression of the group of people who are working at Intermedia when you arrived?
Well, I think basically I saw a lot of a disorganization, because the whole of the four floors were poorly utilized.
So it was being run at the time by Joe Kyle and Dave Orcutt.
Yeah. No, Dave wasn't there anymore.
Oh, he wasn't?
No. I can't remember really who was in charge. All I know was that Al Rezutis had a big part on the third floor, I think. And there were bits and pieces and people working here and there. But there really wasn't any one person that was running it, right? And it was my job to sort of get everything organized in such a way that one could tell Canada Council that this was a lively activity center, right? And a lot of it was pretense because, well, there were a lot of good ideas went up in magical smoke. And then others were solidified and really. I think that you sensed that there was a lot of creativity around, but it was not focused in any way, right? There were a lot of people sort of on the periphery looking in, and others were inside because they just needed some space, right? And so it was a matter of trying to figure out, you know, what is the cohesion? And of course, the cohesion was creativity, and there was an abundance of that.
Was Johnny Neon or John Maschuk there at the time when you arrived? I guess he was working on his
sculptures. Yeah, that's right. And Helen Goodwin was there. They danced there.
Well, what was your impression of John Maschuk, for instance?
Well, he had such a closed way of looking at the world and his surrounding that it was very difficult to get to him, right? But the guy was single-minded in what he wanted to do. And he did some things and I can't remember, all of a sudden he disappeared, he left. And I don't think we ever saw him again. He left very shortly after I came.
Oh, he did. So what was it like to be suddenly confronted with, you know, all these sort of stoned, you know, way out, crazy, you know, hippie artists?
Well,
when you came, of course, you came wearing a suit because you were the lending credibility to Intermedia for the Canada Council.
Actually, not a suit, but a tweed jacket, and I was the tweedy type. But in many ways, I felt out of place. But I knew my role, that I had to be the straight face towards the authorities generally, and towards the rest of society, and towards Canada Council. I also had to try and raise some funds and develop a certain legitimacy in society towards Intermedia. And so I knew what my role was, and so it, even though I sometimes felt awkward and I wish I could have taken my tie off and loosened my collar button, I stayed with the role as much as I could.
Yeah, but you were involved in something which was more or less illegal too. I mean, there was the drugs that were around Intermedia, which were basically marijuana, hashish,
right,
or maybe LSD.
Closed my eyes completely to that. I knew exactly what was happening, and I was asked many, many times by the RCMP, you know, I knew that there were some undercover guys that were talking with me, inquiring about things, and I, you know, whenever I was asked, you know, do you see any drugs? I just said, no, I don't take drugs. And, you know.
Which you didn't. So
I didn't.
Yeah.
And that the sole purpose for me not taking drugs was
so
to stay straight, you know. And which sometimes was not easy. You know, sometimes I would have liked to have partaken in that. But it's when you know what your role is, you follow it, you know, or you fall off the wagon, right? So there you are.
So there were inquiries by the RCMP about Intermedia and the artists and the drugs that may be being consumed there.
Oh, there were. Not directly at, you know, they wouldn't come into the place. Although there were a couple of guys, you know, dressed up as artists, inquiring about, you know, whether they could get some space, right, to do some work, right, and I always asked, you know, to see some of their work, right, and oh yeah, we had some, yeah, some clever inquiries, and.
So, did it ever get to the point where they would come and show you the work?
No.
No.
They just disappeared.
They would disappear.
Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. There were... Well, I...
That's so interesting. Yeah, I never even dreamt that that would be the case.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Of course, though. But, you know, this was a...
Oh, yeah. There was also... yeah, there were... quite a few things, you know, at gatherings too, right? And I remember when we did the electrical connection, I know that there were a whole bunch of people. That's why at all the meetings, I always say, hey, you know, do it outside, you know. Let's not do it here, right? Because...
Well, because the meetings were public.
Yeah, that's right. But also we had a rule that we didn't do anything, any smoke or anything, in the premises or on the premises. You know, it's... I think that was important.
Which was completely ignored.
Yeah, but I just pretended that I had a problem with my nose, right?
I gotcha.
And oh yeah, I know, but hey, it was the times, right? So yeah, I remember Evelyn Roth, whom I always considered to be one of the great creative talents that we had. She came with a project. And she was rather timid because she was so put down by the man that she was living with, who had taken practically all her self-confidence out of her. And she came with a project, and she wanted to make some costumes out of used videotape. And so I thought there was a gas. And I remember I gave her $50 so that she could get some supplies and things. And with that, she started to do all kinds of things. Hats, handbags, and then, of course, you know, tea cozies, and eventually car cozies, right? And, well, and she just went on and on from there with a variety of different projects. And but I never forget how really quite timid she was, you know, even though she had all that talent in her, right? And you can see it here, you know.
Thoughtful, yes.
She's thoughtful, right, but
very
she's,
present.
Yeah.
Look at Helen. Isn't Helen elegant, eh?
Oh, yeah. Remarkable. There's what, another wonderful talent.
What was your impression of Helen, and how did you meet her, and do you have any stories about her?
Well, I think that the first time I met her, I remember it was Thursday evenings. They usually used the downstairs for a dance rehearsal. You know, she didn't particularly pay any attention to me. She just went on rehearsing. And I said, well, this is fascinating. It reminds me of some of the dance routines that I have seen in New York in the last couple of years, because I used to go down to New York from Montreal all the time. And she says, yes, it's very likely that that's what it was. And we got along always very well. I think that, you know, she was such a strong person, you know. She had such a strong will. And she knew exactly what she wanted to do. And it's so sad that she left us so early, you know.
There's Kathy.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I wonder whose art this is.
I know. I was just going to say. It's not Shadbolt.
I wonder. Could it be Shadbolt?
Oh, this is a Shadbolt. This is a Shadbolt.
It looks almost like they're tapestries or something like
but,
that.
But, yeah, do you know what? This what? Is a mural.
Really?
That's a mural. That's, you're right. That's a tapestry. And that's a léger. These are légers.
Oh, okay. Oh, so even that would be a léger then?
No.
No.
That's a mural.
Uh-huh.
I bet you that is the tapestry exhibition at the gallery. The Aubusson tapestries. Oh, one could find out from the library.
What are the Aubusson tapestries?
The Aubusson is an area in France that has been famous since the 12th century for making tapestries. And they're still making them. And I've seen this exhibition, and I'm quite sure that this is a mural. You're familiar with murals, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Art, right?
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, this is a léger. We had Kathy Falk, remember, that, with the projector, the film that I made of her walking around. And
Describe that.
Okay, the idea was to develop a continuous loop with Kathy walking around the room. And I was filming it from the center of the room as she was going around. And we then had a loop projector, and it projected it on the wall, right? And the projector was set on a turntable. So you had a double kind of a thing. The only problem was that the loop and the turntable didn't agree with each other all that well. So we had a lot of technical problems with it. But, well, Kathy was another one of those very creative people. Always new ideas and totally independent, you know.
And Glenn?
He looks kind of stoned.
He's an amazing guy.
He's a great guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I never forget that sculpture that he did for the exhibition at in Japan for Osaka 70. Do you know the story of that?
No, I don't.
No? Well, he did that. He had an entire wall to fill with a sculpture. And so Glenn, you have to get him to tell you that story, but for a month, every day, he made a ceramic piece, a flat piece, and a penis sticking out of it, some flaccid and some in erection, and put a date on each one, right? And then he laid them all out. He put them in a ceramic oven, right, in a kiln, and glazed them and everything else, and he laid them all out, and then the people from the exhibition came to have a look at it. And of course, they had a bird, you know, they just flipped out. And this created a terrible thing. And of course, they stopped it right then and there. They wouldn't have it. And I don't know what happened to all those 31-day exhibits, but
they went to the archives, I think, and
they
were salt shakers. That's like they weren't actual penises; they were salt shakers, but they looked like they were penises. But
yeah,
I think
right.
The way he managed to launder, you know, or make it acceptable was he was calling it salt and pepper shakers.
That's hey, what it
isn't
was.
That right?
That's
yeah.
what it was.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
Oh yeah.
Oh god.
Yeah, I hadn't remembered that was made for Osaka.
Oh
I thought
yeah.
That was,
that's right.
Yeah, I remember mm-hmm. that piece.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, it was for Osaka, 1970. Yeah, that's right. Remember the brownies. There was this.
Tell me the story of the brownies. Start right from the beginning.
You know, CBC came in the morning, and we showed them the whole place, and then they set up for various interviews and also performances. These performances that we just saw there, and. Somebody, and I can't remember who it was had been very kind and very busy making a whole batch of brownies. And because we didn't have time to go out for lunch, and our stomach started to rumble, I started to eat some of these, and CBC guys also did, and everybody else. Because there was a whole lot. I remember it was a huge bowl. And I must have had about six or seven of those things. And I had absolutely no idea that besides Quaker Oats, there was some other substance in it. Right? And as we later on were interviewed, And I was interviewed by a guy, and we were sitting next to each other, and the camera over there. And as we were talking, and I started to feel quite happy and so forth. Well, all of a sudden, a 6-foot-high corrugated fence was built around, I think, Jerry Gilbert and a couple of the other guys, around the back of us. And they started to throw Rice Krispies over us, right? And there we were, and I remember sitting there and sort of picking the Rice Krispies on. And then somebody brought me a huge loaf of bread, which I didn't know what to do. We were being interviewed, so I just put it on my lap. And these Rice Krispies were coming over. And eventually, they just closed the circle with that corrugated cardboard, closing us off from the camera, right? And I thought it was absolutely hilarious because, quite frankly, I was under the influence, right? So there we are.
So had you been stoned before?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay, so it was not an unfamiliar feeling.
No, it wasn't, right. But it was so unexpected that, and it crept up on me.
And you weren't used to being stoned in a situation where you had to perform.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Okay.
And, so
were the CBC guys stoned also?
No, but they thought we were all nuts. I think that they had a little bit of a touch, right? Because they took it in fairly good humor. I never saw that show, though. But I understand that it was broadcast on a Sunday afternoon on an arts program that they had. But
so this is you being interviewed here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when they
interesting.
Put the,
hey, look, this is the camera, and this is the camera, and this is your face in the camera,
right.
And there you are
yeah.
in the distance.
I can't.
With the red
I
light
really,
on.
Yes, I cannot remember anything about who the producer was mm-hmm. or anything.
And this must have been one of the producers here, or the director, maybe.
That it possibly was the director, yeah.
Yeah, because yeah, he's getting ready for Glenn and Gaffney's
right, yeah.
Rice Krispie. Event.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Well, I'm sure that
there's
one
you,
could
here.
Find out. Yeah, I think that some one could find out who that producer was and what show it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it must have been in the spring of, or maybe even summer of 69.
And so this is the beginning of their performance here.
That's
setting,
not the one with the helmet.
It yes, it is. Yeah, it's the yes. helmet comes in later on when he does his dance here.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And this would be a great sequence to,
oh,
to
yeah.
for filming,
oh,
too, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh. Oh, wonderful Al Neal. You know, he turned me on to... what's his name? Glass, the composer.
Philip Glass.
I had never heard anything by him. I remember going out to his place to down on Dollarton Highway there, and he played me some of that stuff. He didn't have any electricity there, I don't think. He played it on a record. I don't know what it was, whether it was just a battery operated thing, or did he have electricity? Do you know?
I think he may have.
Yeah,
but maybe he didn't. It was the mud flats.
Yeah.
So,
oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, how would he have electricity?
Yeah. And I remember hearing that Philip Glass, and I was absolutely floored by it. And then I understood his music, you know, because Al was very much influenced by Glass, you know. And at least that's my perception of great talent. Well, Dennis was always, I always sort of thought of Dennis as a floating through the air. To me, he was a spirit like a fairy. And he was always jovial. He was always happy, regardless of whether he was thinking about something or and he was always pleasant. I never saw Dennis in an unpleasant mood. And he always had a different angle in conversations or in discussions. He always came up with a different kind of an angle. He was a very original thinker, you know. And I liked Dennis very much. You know, some people thought that he was too much of a stone. I thought that he was an exceptional person.
Tell me what you remember about this situation. How did it get set up?
I can't tell you exactly how it happened, but I was asked if we would put on a special show for the visit of Trudeau to Vancouver. And they wanted something that was West Coast and was extraordinary and was somebody that I think was connected with the art gallery, and they approached us, right? And there were thousands of ideas. I remember, and we had to sift through them. Eventually, we decided with this person. It was a woman.
Was it Marguerite Penny?
No, it wasn't. I think it was Marguerite that introduced me to that person from the Liberal Party. And we decided to put a multiple slideshow together. I can't remember whose idea it was.
It was Glenn Lewis was working was with it? Surveyor's Tape. Yeah,
it was. Mm-hmm. Okay. Which was a wonderful idea. And of course, the only thing we didn't figure out was that there was going to be a constant flow of air. And so the images were constantly modulated, right? By air, which was fascinating. But the other thing was that, well, we had slides, we had film. We had all sorts of other things. But one of the things that I remember was that all along the corridor, the entrance way, we had miniature RCMP, which we had blown up, right? They were balloons, right? And so there were all these RCMP all along the entrance. Trudeau loved it. He told me afterwards that it was hilariously fun. But the thing that I remember most was that there were RCMP, of course, with Trudeau. And I remember distinctly one of the guys walking behind Trudeau. There were some in front and some behind. who was kicking the balloons, the RCMP balloons on the side of it. And of course they bobbed and back and forth. Right? And I thought that that was hilarious. So that was my main impression of that evening. And I can't tell you very much of the substance of the content of what we actually projected, you know. But it was fun. It was at the Armories, right?
Seaforth,
yeah. I sometimes block these kind of things out because there were many fires that I had to extinguish, which was, of course, a delight, you know. And but it's interesting how, you know, the artist's interaction with these militaries types was so fascinating, you know, because the military just thought we were totally nuts. I remember that one of the guys, when we started setting up those RCMP balloons, right, when we were blowing up, we must have had 100 of those things, right? And then we had to put them down with tape so they wouldn't take off, right? They just couldn't believe this, you know. I mean, well, you don't expect sense of humor from the military, right? But the funny thing was that about 2 years later, I was asked by Canada Council to actually sit on a committee to write the film policy for Canada. So I was in Ottawa with working with Gérard Pelletier, who was the Secretary of State at the time, and a very good friend of Trudeau. And I mentioned to Pelletier that I had met Trudeau. I used to see him on the train all the time from Montreal to Ottawa when I was still with the Fillmore. And I said, I'd love to see, to meet Mr. Trudeau again. And so we had supper together, the three of us, once. And I mentioned that evening at the Armories. And he said, oh, yeah, that was quite an event. And I know the Liberal Party people in Vancouver weren't all that happy about you. And they didn't want to pay you, right? Because we got $5,000 for it. And apparently it got to him, and he was the one that authorized the payment eventually.
So why did you leave?
Because I said that I committed myself to a couple of years, and I said that really an organization that is so much looking for change and exploration has to have a different person heading it from time to time. Otherwise, it becomes an organization, an institution, which it shouldn't be, right? And perhaps Barry was not the ideal person for it. I think that also the problem with the locale was a problem, right? Because it changed to that church at Semlin, right, and First Avenue, and it wasn't an ideal kind of environment
it was too far removed from where people lived, right? And so that was part of the demise of things. But I think that my decision to not to stay on too long was right. Because, you know, you don't want to have artists becoming an institution.
No, for sure. No, I totally understand that.
Yeah.